Ron Ananian.
I used to do a lot of landscaper trucks, you know, for the local guys in the area.
Yeah, kind of the same idea.
And I couldn't get over how this one guy, Dave, he would go through a starter every 2 years.
Just take your place in the driver's seat.
The Car Doctor.
I'm just at loss why all of a sudden my vehicle just dies.
It's dying because it's getting a drain from somewhere.
Yeah.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, welcome, Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. By the way, this one's for Walter in State College, PAWRSC. Walter had called the previous hour. Walter, if you're still listening, I want to get this out of the way. I was thinking about it during the break between hours. You know, Walter, what you described on your 2018 Toyota about the smell and the oily fluid in the rear of the vehicle, does that vehicle have rear air conditioning? And is the drain line unrestricted? And is it draining properly? And does the air conditioning work? Does that car have an AC leak? And I wish I had asked you that on air. So if you're out there and you're listening, because if that vehicle has an air conditioning leak in the rear evaporator, if it has rear air, it'll smell funny and it'll leave an oily residue on the rear trunk floor area of the vehicle. It could. I'm just, you know, because Walter, that was a weird one. I want to know the answer to that. Let's go over to Micah in Maine. Micah, welcome aboard, sir. Once again, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. What's going on today?
Well, Ron, you know, you were talking about for weeks this Goodyear brake giveaway that you're giving to frontline workers, and I wanted to nominate someone.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Just
go ahead.
Amazing,
yeah.
And truly deserves this.
Okay.
His name is Nick, and he's my physical therapist.
Okay.
Now, let me tell you how I got to meet him. I was supposed to have major back surgery last year. It was scheduled to go in January, and my surgeon said, let's start working you out and get you into physical therapy and, you know, get your muscles working before we do the surgery. And that was last November, almost a year ago. Well, I started working with Nick, and Nick has done such a job on me that I haven't needed the surgery, which is pretty amazing to begin with. He's worked on me that hard. But Nick is an incredibly hard worker, and he's out there, and they've been open during this entire pandemic, exposing themselves in this physical therapy office to people coming in, taking all the precautions that they can, but he's kept me going, and he's not only that, but when they're closed on Saturday and Sunday, on Saturdays, he'll spend all day working on his truck or on his car. He will clay bar it. He will put it all together and get it perfect. He'll be working on the engine. He's a car nut, an absolute nut. But then on Sundays, he goes and he volunteers at a rehab center to work with people there to get them in shape and get them back home from the hospital and things like that.
Wow.
He's an absolute... My gym closed down, and he said, Micah, you need a third day a week where you can work on the bike. So we're going to get you down here on a third day, and we're going to get you on the bike and get you working because we need to increase your cardio. When my gym wasn't open, he, you know, again, taking a chance, having people in there, he spends his time with people individually. He's paying off his student loans. Money is not a great thing for him. He still lives with his folks because it's a lot less expensive to do that.
Right.
On other days, when he's not working on his car, he's helping his brother rebuild his home that he just bought. He's just this incredible guy that works incredibly hard and loves cars. Absolutely loves cars and could put those brakes on himself.
Okay, I'll tell you what, Micah. Yeah, no, listen, stop right there. I mean, he's in the running. Do me a favor, send us an email with just a highlight of the information you just laid out for us. If you just send it to me at ron@cardoctorshow.com, and we'll get him in the running. And, you know, as Mike is talking about, we're talking about the Goodyear Give Him a Brake giveaway, where we're helping Goodyear Brakes give away brakes for somebody's vehicle that's a frontline worker, you know, hospital, emergency, police, fire, et cetera, the people that have been out there through this pandemic trying to keep us all safe and keep us, as you know, going Goodyear Brakes is supporting this, and they want to recognize somebody. So this week is the last week. We're going to give the brakes away next week on the show live. So if you've got anybody you want to recommend, Micah, like I said, ron@cardoctorshow.com, or anybody else, send us an email. Put it up on our Car Doctor Facebook page, Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor. Talk about them there. Everybody's in the running. A decision to the judges is final, and that'll happen sometime later on this week. So, Mike, I appreciate the call as always. Let's get over to Sam in Arizona, 97 old Silhouette, and a problem with an intermittent overheat. Am I reading that right, Sam?
Yes, thank you. Hi.
What's going on here? Yes,
I'll
sir.
I'll give you the latest.
Yes, sure.
So, this morning I went out with everything cold, sitting overnight, and opened the radiator cap and put about less than a quart of distilled water in it to top it off. And the overflow tank had probably a little less than a quart.
Okay.
So I started it up just to see what was happening if the fans would come on. I turned the air conditioner on, the fans came on, so I shut off right away. So the temperature gauge didn't even move off the bottom left. I opened the radiator up, and it just overflowed out. So does that mean the engine is putting air into the coolant?
Well, it sounds like you're overpressurizing the cooling system. So any other formal diagnosis? Now, you're saying you're also, I have two questions for you. Any formal diagnosis? And number two, are you saying by temperature gauge this engine will boil over?
Yes.
Okay.
So I'll give you more details. Driving along on the freeway, normally it'll run right in the middle with airflow going 65 miles an hour.
Okay.
30 miles, no problems. Sometimes it'll creep up a little bit and bounce back down to the middle. But once I, like, hit a stoplight, and Tucson's been about 100 degrees the last 2 weeks.
100 degrees is cold. Here. 100 degrees is cold for you guys. So
yeah.
I understand.
So it looks like when I'm at a stop, it tends to overheat a lot. And sometimes the low coolant sensor comes on intermittently in the radiator. So am I having coolant flow problems? I have a cell-safe thermostat. I wonder if it didn't open all the way.
Well, here, let's talk about this. First of all, the low coolant sensor in the radiator will tell low coolant. It doesn't tell circulation. It doesn't know doesn't know if the coolant's circulating or not. It doesn't react to temperature that way. It's not a temp sensor. So are you seeing the low coolant sensor come on? The light come on?
Yeah, and then it'll go off. And like is it the wires? Is it the actual sensor? Or really low?
Sometimes
I check the radiator, it's full. And like this morning it was down like a less than a quart.
Are you continuously adding coolant or water to this cooling system?
This is like the second time this summer.
Okay, so is this a continuous overheat? Here, let me start it here, Sam. What I always look at when I'm looking at an older vehicle with an intermittent overheat problem. All right, think about the emergency room at the hospital. What's the first thing they do? They triage the patient, right? They look at they look at vitals and they look at the basics. Okay, I want to put a scan tool on this. I want to see where the temperature really is. All right,
they did that.
Okay, and where was it? Does it show overheat?
Once it starts to get hot, it'll climb up to, sometimes it's like just starting up and driving down the road, it'll go past 180, 200, 215, 220, and then it tracks with the gauge. And then I guess the thermostat opens and you can see it come back down.
Okay, what temperature do the fans come on at?
Huh?
What temperature do the cooling fans come on at? I bet you.
I've been running the air conditioning, so they come on right away.
Okay, don't do that. All right. I think what we've got to do is, all right, where's the temperature going? You know what? Let the car overheat. Start it up. Let it sit in the driveway. Put a scan tool on it. Where do the cooling fans come on? This car has to be able to go. Let's agree to this. All right. This car. Do we agree? This car has to be able to start it in the driveway. Scan tool on it. The engine has to come up to temp before this car overheats or boils over. Cooling fans should come on, and I'm trying to remember. I think 229, 232 was low fan turn on spec for that vehicle. It comes on quite high. All right,
well, that, That's one fan, or
right,
both.
Right, that's one fan. And then high-speed fan came on in the 237, 238, something like that. One came on low, one came on high. But if in that time period, before the fans come on, sitting there at idle in your driveway, if the hoses are, if one hose is rock hard and the other one is not, the system has an imbalance of pressure, and I would start thinking about a potential head gasket that's failing. Because that was real common. This is a 3-4 silhouette.
Yeah, yeah. And it's got 180,000 miles.
Right.
Had the head gasket done once, but you see no white clouds out of the exhaust.
Right. And, well, don't always judge it by that. And do you see anything in the oil as well? Have you looked at the oil? Does the oil show any signs of coolant contamination?
No.
Okay. So, you know, we've got to eliminate head gasket. We both can kind of smell it, no pun intended here, right?
Yeah.
So what I'd be curious about is, have you taken the radiator cap off cold, low coolant level in the radiator, as you described, and crank it over? Do you get a gusher of coolant?
Yeah, I think I have, and I got that.
Okay, you got a head gasket issue. You're leaking coolant into the combustion chamber, and it's just a big air pump. An engine's a big air pump. You're pressurizing the cooling system and pushing coolant out, you know, and pressurizing it in the system in the water jackets. All right.
Yeah. So I tried to do a leak down test with a coolant color.
Right.
And it just like almost like a volcano.
Right. So here, let me say this and try this. Okay. Once you decide it's head gaskets, all right, conventional methods or whatever, think about K-Seal. K-Seal happens to be an excellent cooling system sealer, and I think that's right up your alley. Go to kseal.com. You can read about it. You got an O'Reilly Auto Parts by you?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Go down to your local O'Reilly Auto Parts. Ask them for a bottle of K-Seal. Follow the directions. Try that. Okay? Once you determine this is a head gasket, and from my seat here, that's what it sounds like. It sounds like you've got a head gasket issue because of all the things that are going on here. Last thing to mention, I just want to mention it, and then I'm going to go, is think about, you know, if it overheats, because we could have two problems. Are all the spoilers and cooling fans, et cetera, that are in the front of this car under the bumper correct, that we're getting correct airflow being pulled in through the radiator once the fans come on? And don't forget to check to make sure the fans are working. You've got some homework, Sam. Do it. Call me back. I'm Ron Ananian, the car doctor. We'll be back right after this.
It's the little old lady from Pasadena.
He drives that way, but when it comes to fixing cars, Ron has car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Here's Ron.
Hey, let's go to Bill in Iowa. Bill, welcome aboard, sir. What's going on?
Hey, we got two terms we use in Iowa.
All right.
Cruise and scoop the loop. So what we did on October the 11th, we started out on a 200-mile ride, and we went through 14 towns, and we did 5 stops, and we had anywhere from 40 to 60 cars. They would pull in behind and go. I had my 38 Chevrolet Master Deluxe Coupe, and my buddy had his 36 Pontiac Coupe out of Messina, Iowa. And we ended up driving 190 miles that day.
Just such a different time period, huh, Bill? You know?
And we went and toured. The whole purpose was to tour the foliage in Iowa with the colors.
Wow, what a great time.
It was awesome.
Yeah, what a great time.
I had Corvette pull in behind me on one of the legs, and when we stopped, he come to my car and he said, I want to see what you got in there for a motor. He said, you've been running 50 to 55 mile an hour. That's what the rules said. The car or vehicle has to run 50 to 55. And I got a 6-cylinder with Corvette headers with glass packs tucked underneath. And that thing is awesome if you've never heard a 6-cylinder run with a Corvette headers on it.
What a time period, right, Bill, to look back at the older cars and
unreal.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Yeah, compared to today.
And my car was probably the oldest car there.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of Corvettes. We had a lot of GTOs. We had just anything you could imagine. We had motorhomes, motorcycles. It was a car show on wheels, Instead of at one spot, it ran 180 miles.
You got any pictures, Bill?
No.
Bill, come on.
Me and the phone picture just don't happen. Yeah. Sorry.
Well, next year when you do it, if you get some pictures, by all means, you send us some pictures, and we'll be glad to put them up on the Car Doctor Facebook page, because there is something very nostalgic and very warm and inviting about looking at a fall cruise and a 38 Chevy and some of the rest of the cars you're describing. Bill, thanks for the time, and thanks for the call. I've got to move on. I've got a bunch of calls yet today, but I appreciate your interest. Steve in New Hampshire, 04 Chevy Tahoe. What's going on here today, Steve?
Not too much, Ron. How are you?
Good, sir. What's cooking? Let's go.
No, not too much. About 60 days ago, I did some rear brake work on the Tahoe. I ended up replacing rotors, pads, and caliper bracket, and the slides and the boots.
Okay.
I lubed everything up with caliper slide grease. Everything looked good in there. Again, the slides are brand new. Got them at O'Reilly. But I'm having a unique problem right now where I can feel it in the seat of my pants and actually hear it. Whenever I come to a stop sign or a light, full set of lights, both sides are calipers. It feels like they're sticking.
So when you say it feels like it's sticking, what do you get, like a thump? Like it sort of hits you in the seat of your pants?
Yes. They eventually will release, maybe a half a second to a second later. But these are not the original calipers. They're aftermarket, again, O'Reilly.
Right.
Those are done around 2.5 years ago.
Okay.
So I don't know if maybe the piston inside the bore of the caliper had got moisture in there and those are sticking or what?
Well, what I would do is I'd support it up in the air somehow, jack stands, a lift, whatever, and try applying the brake. When you apply the brake, the brakes lock, and then when you release, does it release right away? You know,
yes.
can you duplicate it, you know, in a bay, so to speak? If you can duplicate it in a bay, then, you know, if the caliper is locked, if the wheel is locked, you know, take the wheels off, if the rotor can't be turned, what makes it go away? Does opening a bleeder release that wheel or the wheel on the opposite side? Could we have a hose? Could we have a hose problem? All right.
Yep.
Could we have one singular hose in the back causing the one or both of the rear calipers to stick on? Now,
sure.
It would not be impossible, depending upon condition of fluid, that the caliper bore. You ever take a caliper apart? Boy, those pistons have no clearance. It's amazing how tight they are. And you get some on a vehicle. It's been around a little bit. And there's the crud builds up down on the bottom, and you did pads, and you pushed the piston all the way back in. Did you happen to open the bleeder or draw out some of the fluid in the master while you were compressing?
Yes, I drew out fluid out of the master. By the way, every single brake line, I subbed this out. All the brake lines were compromised, so I had a local shop do it. Fresh fluid in there. But
Got it.
I did take about 2 inches off the top of the master.
Okay. So then do it the way I said. Do we have does cracking a bleeder release pressure somewhere? Does it cause the system not to hang up? If the calipers move, if the slides move, and I'm betting they will, I'm thinking this is more of an internal hydraulic issue, and you're going to have to attack it from there and possibly replace calipers, take one apart, or put hoses on it. Do that. Call me back, Steve. I'm here for you. Ron and Amy, the Car Doctor, will return right after this. Welcome back. We're on Nina the Car Doctor. God, I love that Star Wars stuff. Gee, I love that kind of talk. Okay, stop. So I'll show you the Force. Let's go over to Paula in Connecticut. Paula, welcome. Tell us the story. I think this is a tale of woe about your Mercedes coachman. What's going on?
Yeah, it feels like it. So I bought this on Craigslist, so I didn't buy it through a dealer.
Right.
But he had done his own oil changes, maintained the receipt. And then we did our oil changes, maintained the receipt. We use Mercedes products or Mercedes-approved products, which the warranty states that you can do.
Right.
And then at around, I think it's 56 plus thousand miles, I was driving home from North Carolina. And I was about an hour away, and I looked down, and it was on E mode. It was making a weird noise, and I looked down, and it said E instead of D. So I think like economy mode is what it is. I don't know how it got into that.
Right.
But then the RPMs surged to 4,000 RPMs, and so I popped it into neutral because it was climbing. And my dad was with me. He's like, "What are you doing?" Because it revved up, but I had my foot on the brake. And so I wasn't putting my foot on the gas. It just was revving up, even though I had it in neutral. And then when I got down to about 30 miles an hour, I popped it back into drive. The whole dashboard lit up like a Christmas tree, but it didn't feel like Christmas. Mm-hmm. And then I pulled over to the side, and it was kind of like, oh, my goodness, what just happened? And we decided to try to turn it back on, and none of the check engine lights or it didn't register as hot. So we drove it, and my husband was on the phone, and I said, oh, it will only go about 40. He said, it must be in limp mode, you know, get off the highway immediately.
Right.
So my dad was yelling at me not to get off. I did get off, and we found this little spot, but there's no facilities, and it wasn't hot. We got out, and so my dad said, you know, let's give it 20 minutes, and we'll just try again. There's no lights on. And we turned it back on, still no check engine lights. We take it about a half a mile, and it just starts going, and I turned it off immediately. And then we had to put it in neutral and back it down the hill back to that spot so we weren't in the middle of the road because a wrecker couldn't come that night.
You know that your husband is always going to remind you that you're the one that broke the motorhome. You know that, don't you?
No, actually. He was impressed that I didn't, like, crash it when it started freaking out. Because he was on the phone hearing my dad saying, what are you doing? What's going on?
So what's Mercedes actually saying? They're saying that even though you did your own oil changes, it's not covered.
Well, so what happened at first is I took it in to Mercedes-Benz there, and they said, you know, we just opened the hood, and they said it looks like somehow metal's getting into it, but we're going to check into the warranty before we go any further with our diagnostic.
Right.
And then they were like, well, it looks like nothing's ever been done on this, which actually there's several times that the previous owner had taken it in to get sensors done. I submitted my chips, but then I found out there's one receipt I was missing for the oil change, and they were like, oh yeah, no, that's no go. And I understood that because I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I think it might have blown out the window, because in Kansas the wind is crazy. And I opened the door and I put all my receipts in the dash, and then I organize them when I get home.
Right.
And some receipts flew out the window, and I was concerned that that was one of them, because when I bought it, I stopped and bought Mercedes oil at Mercedes there, and I told them I was a new owner, and they said, oh yeah, we'll put your information so anything you purchase will be on record. And I called them. They didn't have it on record, and I wasn't registered as the owner through Mercedes. So that was their other issue, too. And then I did find that receipt, and they were like, oh, because I had to drive all the way to Danbury to look in the RV for it, and it was there. And they were like, oh, well, it still might not be covered.
You
might have put too much oil or too little.
Do you have a credit card slip for any of this, Paula, that you could prove what you purchased and when?
I did, but now I have I had the physical receipt. Okay. So we have all the receipts.
So you have all your receipts, and they're still denying the claim.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're still denying the claim because they said he could have put too much or too little oil, even though my dad had actually checked it just an hour before it broke down, and it was perfectly fine.
Wow.
The Mercedes only requires oil changes on this vehicle every 20,000 miles. We did three oil changes in 15 in that 20,000 mile range because we feel like that 20,000 stuff is just too much.
Right. Okay.
And they're saying now that they're going to be nice if I pay for a teardown. And it's a bearing, then they might cover it, is what I'm being told now.
Okay, so
and
here's
it's
what
going to be a $24,000
repair. No. Paula, let me jump in here, all right? So I want you to call a lawyer on Monday. This is my thought, all right? Because my thought is a warranty contract is every bit of a contract. That warranty policy is a contract. And, you know, there's going to be some legal definitions in there that neither you or I understand. And
yeah.
I think there's got to be somebody to interpret this, you know, for them to say, well, here's my, you know, for you to say, here's my receipts, and I'm no lawyer, all right, but I'm just my way of thinking, you know, for you to say, here's my receipts, here's what was used, here's where I purchased it from your dealers, and they're telling you, well, that's not good enough. How do you figure that? Where does it say where does it say in the warranty contract that, you know, they have the right of first refusal such that they can say, well, that's not good enough? That's a judgment call. This isn't judgment. Well, this is business.
It does say that the warranty is void if you use the wrong filters or oil.
Okay.
If you do not use Mercedes approved, which we did use only Mercedes approved.
That's my point. If you've got receipts,
that's where the legal jargon.
Right, but if you've got receipts for Mercedes filters, if you've got receipts for Mercedes oil, if there's Mercedes filter on the vehicle, then where's the fault? Yeah. All right.
Well, he did buy one through Mobil 1, which was Mercedes approved. It was a Napa, and he's wondering if that's where they're speculating. But it says Mercedes approved for this rig. We looked up the VIN number.
Then the lawsuit would go against Napa because they're saying that it's Mercedes approved and Mercedes is denying it. That's why I'm saying I think an hour or two of a lawyer's time would at least give you
it. I did tell them that. Because I've been very patient with them. It's been there since October 3rd.
Right.
And they finally got back to me yesterday. And I told them, you know, this is a motorhome. I don't think you guys realize it, but I was coming back from a trip. I need to dump the tank.
Right.
That they, like, freezing temperatures are coming. And I told the guy, you're going to have a poopsicle out there if you don't start helping
right.
me out.
So,
and they don't realize the extent of care of a motorhome. They're used to Mercedes vehicles. And
right.
that's my new stress is they've taken 2.5 weeks. They didn't even order the engine. I said, why didn't you at least order the engine or tell me how much it is? It's taking you this long to tell me how much the engine would even
right.
cost. I was right. figuring like 10, 15.
Right.
But I did tell him, I said, at this point, I feel like I need to hire a lawyer. But the whole bearing thing, you don't think I should go ahead and authorize the teardown?
I don't know that I would authorize to take anything apart until you talk to a lawyer, because my way of thinking is, talk to a lawyer. What's the legal definition? What do you have to work with? Why take it apart? Now it's apart. All right? Unless you're planning to let Mercedes fix it and you're going to pay the $24,000 regardless, let's find out what you're going to do before you do it. What if the lawyer says, you know, yeah, under the guidelines of what's here, they have to fix it, and now it goes to court. Do you really want it sitting apart for 3 months or however long it takes to get to court with the engine spread out all over the shop and you know, parts disappear, it becomes a bigger problem. So my advice, and that's why I wanted to talk to you up here on air, is I would talk to a lawyer. I would get a legal definition of what that warranty contract entitles you to, governed under the laws of your state or wherever that contract is applicable. Usually it's across the country. And then once you talk to the lawyer, it'll be money well spent. You know, then you can proceed and go talk to Mercedes or have him send a letter to Mercedes. And I wouldn't be afraid, A, to talk to Mercedes corporate, although I'm sure you've done that. And B, once you know that you've got a leg to stand on and that according to the contract, it's more in your favor, I wouldn't be afraid to call the local news authority and talk about how the consumer is being hurt here by misrepresentation and fraudulent use of a warranty policy. Just my two cents, but I'm no lawyer. Call me back, Paula. Keep me in the loop. You've got my email. Let me know what happens. Let me move along. I've got a lot of calls. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Let's go to Diane in Vermont. Diane, welcome to the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Hi.
Hi.
First of all, I'm on a cell phone in a car. I hope I don't lose you.
Okay. Me too.
I have a 2019 Hyundai Tucson, and the main question I called about was rodent prevention. I live in the country. I don't have a garage, just a carport.
Right.
And there are many, many rodents around, squirrels, chipmunks, mice. How do I make sure they don't get in the car? Are there any products you recommend?
There's a couple of things out there. You know, I just recently saw something. I'm trying to think of it was a mice, getridofmice.com or something. It was some sort of transmitting device that you placed in and around the vehicle, and it would make such a noise that the animals would wander off. I haven't tried it. I haven't really researched it. It's just something I saw on TV as a commercial. I went, wow, that's kind of an interesting idea. My one concern with it was, how does it affect pets? Right, because they hear at a different level than we hear. So I'd caution you that, you know, that would be one question I would ask them. The good old-fashioned way was, and people still do it to this day, is a plastic bag, mothballs, and, you know, just punch some holes in the plastic bag, mothballs, throw it under the hood of the car, throw it in the trunk area. The car will smell a little bit like mothballs, but if it's sitting, the animals don't like that. They find that very sharp. As far as a smell. The other thing you can do and be aware, Honda actually makes a product called Pepper Tape, where you can actually it's rotent tape. They make an electrical tape with pepper adhered to it, and it actually you can place it around the wiring harness in various critical areas that you're concerned. And once they get a taste of that, they'll leave the car alone. They'll run away forever. Those are the three things that we see and use on a common everyday basis, or the two are. The third one I haven't tried yet, but that would be it. Yeah, that's tough in an area that you're doing, especially with just a carport and not a garage. So, you can try those things.
Okay.
Mothballs usually does scare them away. So, all right? And if not a really big cat. One more question real quick, Diane.
The manual recommends Quaker State oil. Do I have to use Quaker State? I've been a Mobil 1 customer for 4 years.
Yeah, I would ask them why. Nothing wrong with Quaker State, but why? Usually you find when a manufacturer recommends an oil, there was some quid pro quo backroom politicking going on somewhere. And
that's what I figured.
Yeah, that's, but as long as the Mobil 1, it's easy enough. The owner's manual or service information will state the oil has to meet such and such a spec and so forth. You should be able to find that spec on the Mobil 1 bottle. And as long as it says meets Hyundai spec XYZ, as far as I'm concerned, it's good to go. That's what the whole purpose of the SAE specs was all about. So just follow it up like that. All right. I appreciate the call. 855-560-9900. Coming back right after this. Welcome back. Let's get over to Winnie in New York City. I think that kind of rhymes. 07 Honda Accord. Winnie, what did you do today? How can I help?
Hi. I yesterday mistakenly put antifreeze in my windshield washer fluid cup.
Okay.
And what do I do? Do I flush it out? Do I take
A repair shop should have something called a suction gun, which you can just, put in there and draw the fluid out. Listen, this is an easier fix. If you put washer fluid in the coolant, that's a bigger problem because then you have to drain the entire cooling system, or you should, because of cross-contamination. And then again, it depends on how much, but neither here nor there to fix this. And the reason why I would tell you to fix this is because if you spray antifreeze on the windshield, antifreeze is an oil-based solution in a lot of cases, in all cases actually, and it's going to smear. And it's going to make a mess, and it'll eventually, it's not great for the wiper blades, it's not great for the glass, and it's going to impair your vision. So you might even be able to remove the washer bottle. There might be a trim button there. Undo the clip and lift the button up and pour it out and just wash it out, and then just flush, just run some washer fluid through the spritzers, and you might have to clean the windshield by hand with some Windex, but, that'll do it. Not the end of the world, kiddo.
Okay, so you're saying I have to take the cup out, or can I just use the suction to take it out?
You can use the suction. You can use the suction
water.
To take it out. Yeah, you can use the suction to take it out, and then I would just put a good quality washer fluid in and run the nozzles a couple of times to, blow out whatever little contamination you can on the glass, and, just clean the wipers if you're going to use the wipers to, cycle and, clean the glass with some Windex and a paper towel and clean it up real good. So
right. Somebody said antifreeze will damage your paint on the car?
No, antifreeze. Well, you're not going to leave it on there long term. Brake fluid damages paint. Antifreeze, I won't say it doesn't. It's a chemical to me, and I wouldn't leave it on the paint without washing it off. So, my knowledge, antifreeze generally does not. But regardless, if I had spilled some on paint working in the shop or on a car at home, I would automatically clean it up anyway. So.
With the suction thing, what do you call it again? A suction?
Well, it's a suction gun. It's a and I'm not saying use something from the kitchen, but you want to draw the juices off the bottom of the turkey pan, and you put the
right.
And you a turkey baster, so to speak, but you want to use it backwards, that kind of thing.
Okay. So I have to have a cup, an extra container to catch whatever comes out.
Well, how else are you going to get it out? You have to draw it out.
Yeah, but I'm saying. I have to draw it out and then empty whatever catching it, right?
Right. So you'd have to pour it in that. Now, do you have a wet vac? Do you have a wet shop vac?
A wet shop bag. I don't even know what that is.
A wet shop vac. Like a shop vacuum that sucks up water.
No.
Yeah,
no,
okay.
I live in New York.
Yeah.
We don't have those.
But if you had that, that could possibly work as well. All right.
Okay, I think I have the idea. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Good luck to you.
Right.
Yeah, it's where you put things is difficult. You know, you got to make sure it's the right fluid in the right spot, and then, you know, and I'm not picking on Winnie. Listen, I appreciate any time somebody tries to work on their car. You want to know why they took dipsticks away from transmissions? Because people were putting wrong fluid in, or they were, you know, wrong trans fluid for the vehicle, wrong type, or they were putting the wrong fluid altogether down the wrong hole. And a manufacturer is concerned about warranty and concerned about, you know, maintaining the vehicle, and just eliminate it, make it more difficult to get to the fluid levels. And this is exactly why. It's not Winnie's fault. It's just, you know, we see this on a regular basis. You have to be so careful of where you put fluid. Hey, real quick, let's go look at the Facebook page. Helen's writing in. She wants to know, where's Helen's? We're here on Facebook. Hey, Ron, lame question. No, it's not Helen. No question's lame or bad. What's the best way to clean the inside of a windshield? I've used glass plus wipes. Nah, I don't like that. Got to be cool and dry. A little bit of Windex. I spray it directly on a soft towel, or I'll spray it on newspaper. It seems that a good old-fashioned black and white newspaper, get them a little soaking wet and scrub it up. It'll cut through the crud and the grit, and then use a dry cloth to kind of polish it and clean it off and get all the residue off, and that should work. It's a good way to do it. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, reminding you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless.